Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
Catherine Whittaker and myself, David Law, come to you from Melbourne Park. We've made it. We are under blue skies, wispy white clouds. Catherine's here for Eurosport. I'm here for BBC Radio. We're brought to you in association with The Telegraph. And we're delighted to be here, and we're here because of you, and that's because Kickstarter has been completed. We've reached our target, so that's magnificent. Means that we can do the show throughout the year. But we've got to get onto a pretty big talking point. A huge story has broken today that Andy Murray is to retire this year, and he is not going to be playing tennis after Wimbledon of this year. He's come into a press conference today. He's announced that his target is Wimbledon, but even that feels a little bit of an optimistic target right now. He came into his press conference. He broke down upon answering the first question of the day, which was quite simply, how are you feeling? And he said, not great. And he broke into tears. He had to leave the room for a few minutes. He came back in and he explained that he's been playing with pain throughout this period. We know that he played a practice match yesterday with Novak Djokovic, which Catherine attended, and she'll be able to tell you more about that. But really, it was very clear that Andy Murray has reached the end game here, and he knew it a couple of months ago. He knew that he needed to set himself an end point, as he described it. He said, I had to do that with my team, and we decided Wimbledon would be where I'd want to go out if I can. But as he sat there in tears, it was quite clear he doesn't actually know if he can stand it, whether he can stand playing tennis until that point, such as the pain he's dealing with. And he admitted that this may be his final tennis tournament as a professional. He's not going to play doubles on the side. He's not going to just become a doubles-only player. And with Roberto Bautista Agut, his first-round opponent here, it's possible, Catherine, it's quite possible that that could be the final match of his career.
Yeah, if not probable. It's been a harrowing morning, really. I hope people understand using a word like that. I know sometimes people say, it's only sport. But read my blog for articles, for arguments about, you know, why I don't really believe in that sort of it's only sport throwaway line that comes out a lot. You know, it's been an absolutely gut-wrenching way to start the tournament for us, and a thousand times worse for Andy Murray. And I can't believe how surprised I am by it, because as you say, I went to that practice match yesterday. It's kind of a new thing this year for the Australian Open that these practice matches they're advertised to the public. They've got an umpire, they've got ball boys, they've got line judges. It feels like an official match. They've got Hawkeye, for goodness sake. And I'm sat there thinking, I don't know, the logical part of my brain is going, this could be potentially a pretty difficult watch. But then another part of my brain is saying, but the fact that he's agreed to this toughest of tests of where he's at and agreed to do it publicly, he must feel some optimism. And an hour later, I left the Margaret Court Arena feeling feeling really sad, really, really sad. It was, yeah, I mean, that was pretty harrowing, frankly. It was, you know, I know Stuart Fraser's reported that he didn't retire from the match, that they'd run out of time, but I was sat there watching it, and after Andy went and shook hands, Djokovic hit for a further 10 minutes with Marion Vida just doing drills while Andy just sat there in seemingly in despair, surrounded by his team, shaking his head. And I think that was not the first moment that he fully confronted what he was dealing with, but maybe that was the real penny dropping.
That not even Wimbledon might... That might be beyond him this year.
I mean, look, the way I see it on the basis of what I witnessed yesterday, and I hope I'm wrong, and I hope that yesterday was a particularly bad day, and that there was maybe something else going on, I don't know. But if what I saw yesterday, 6-1, 4-1 retired practice match against Novak Djokovic, where, in all honesty, Djokovic was barely trying... I see the round one match against Roberto Bautista Agut is kind of an exhibition. Mm. I mean, you couldn't wish for a worse opponent than Bautista Agut. His whole deal is making his opponent run. I mean, I actually spare a little thought for him, for Bautista Agut, because that is a tough assignment. If he goes full pelt again. I hope what I witnessed yesterday was not the whole story, but if Bautista Agut goes full pelt against the Andy Murray that I win yesterday, we're talking about a Murray that can barely win points. Mm. And that is... It's not what I want to see from Andy Murray. I spoke to him this morning, good on him. I mean, he did a full hour of press, I think, and it was clear that, as difficult as it was, he wanted to talk. I think his agent wanted him to talk and get it all out there. It was the first time he's really fronted up to us about the fact that he's been...
He's needed to do it.
The fact, he used the word agony, didn't he? He said, I've been in agony for 20 months and I don't want to put words into his mouth, but we all know what it's like when you're feeling something you don't want to feel, and saying it out loud is something you don't want to do because that makes it more real. And I feel like there's an element of that with Andy Murray and the pain he's in. I mean, to hear him talk about a potential surgery option, which is this hip resurfacing thing, to hear him talk about that in terms of just an option that might improve his quality of life. We're not even talking about tennis here, we're talking about post-retirement, day-to-day. He was talking about improved quality of life, which is, you know, what we're talking about with my 95-year-old grandpa that's in hospital at the moment, just having had a hip replacement. Do you know what I mean? Like, seeing this guy that 2 years ago was world number one, who's just had everything snatched away from him and taken out of his control, talk about measures to improve the quality of his life is just... It's unthinkable. And it's hard to go from that to thinking of a possible way that he can play for another 6 months. I mean, it might be that he stops and comes back for a sort of testimonial type thing at Wimbledon, but it must have been awful for him yesterday to know, he knew Djokovic wasn't trying. Can you imagine how that feels? Yeah. Your great rival.
The thing is, he wants to be a tennis player. He doesn't want to be a kind of circus act.
No.
And I'm quite sure... No matter what happens, every tournament under the sun will be wanting to make a fuss of him and you know, show their love, really. And I think that's fine, but I don't think he will want beyond this match. If he's not going to be competitive in the way that he wants to be competitive, I don't see him wanting to just be rolled out to play some games.
The thing he said to me that... And I got three questions with him for Eurosport, and he was choking on his words in the first, and I stopped the interview. Sort of, he got most of a third answer out, and felt like it was, you know, torture for. He wanted to speak, but equally he just couldn't find the words. Again, we all know. I think most of us know what that feels like. But the thing that that put a lump in my throat during that interview was him saying it's not fun anymore. You know, he's put himself through what he's put himself through for the last 20 months because he loves tennis and he wants to do it. So for him to admit to himself and now to us that he doesn't enjoy it anymore because of the pain that he's in, I mean, that's everything, isn't it? Why is he... He's obviously looking in the mirror and going, why am I doing this if it's not fun anymore? So that is another thing that makes me question whether we'll see him beyond Monday night. It'd be interesting to see what the tournament do with him on Monday night, do with that match, given that, for me, I think it's a highly likelihood that that is his last ever professional match night session in Rod Laver Arena. I mean, my guess is they'll ask Andy what he wants, but that would surely be a fitting...
Who knows exactly what will happen? I mean, I think at this stage that what they will want to do is let him be the professional that he is and play the match, and then after it they'll probably make a fuss of him if he's okay with that. I don't know 100%, but it's I think the thing is, I was getting your text yesterday when I was in the air coming to Melbourne, and you were telling me what was happening on that in that practice match, and you said a couple of things to me that you didn't put out publicly, and I think that that's the thing that at the time we don't want to be imposing our own... I know it's kind of our job to give our views on what we're seeing, but you don't want to impose your own version of events onto somebody's life and career when it means that much to them. In a way, you want them to be able to make that call. And I also think as well, frankly, we've been made fools of by Roger Federer a couple of times, you know, all of us have. But I was told this morning by my BBC radio producer that I didn't need to come in today, that I could just have a day off in Melbourne and just get over the jet lag. Got in at midnight last night, just take it easy. I'd already got my bag packed. I was already on my way here because I wanted to come to this press conference. Now, I'm not saying I knew it would happen, but I did think it's not impossible that this is the end.
You were the first person that's... I mean, not out loud, because you were cramped up on a flight from Dubai to Melbourne, but you were the first person that said in writing to me he could retire today or tomorrow, you know. You're the first person that expressed
that. And I'm not looking for credit for that. It's more just that the sense... was, for me, if you can't play after all these months of rehab, you've tried everything. I said a while back, it's about leaving no stone unturned, and he's turning them all over one at a time, and there's no stones left.
And I felt the same. As I say, I left Margaret Court Arena yesterday feeling sad. I felt completely deflated. And then I saw what he'd done on Instagram last night. There was the a fan had put a tweet out saying, put an Instagram post out, sorry, saying, you know, all my dreams come true. Andy Murray was my hero. I finally got the chance to watch him play in this practice match. And maybe that was why he said yes to the... Not her specifically, but you know, people like that. The thought of people that, you know, just wanted to get a glimpse of him playing, and she said, you know, all my dreams come true, he's an inspiration, etc., etc. And he responded to it and said, I'm really sorry I didn't put on a better show for you. And then offered her tickets to see him play on Monday. And I looked at that and I thought, oh, well, okay, that's not a guy that's thinking about retiring here and now. But then... obviously, with the benefit of hindsight of what's happened today, I now see that all that is a reflection of how tormented and anguished and torn he's been over the past few weeks and months, and the fact that yesterday's practice match probably brought things to a crashing head of realisation for him. Yeah. And there was a... I hope it's not overstepping the mark to share something I witnessed while he was doing his bits and bobs of, well, more than bits and bobs, his sort of full hour of media today. He did his press conference, spoke to World Feed, spoke to Channel 9, then came and spoke to me for Eurosport, then spoke to Russell for BBC Radio, and then he left to go into a smaller side room to have a chat with the Brit journos, the outcome of which I'm sure we'll be seeing in the papers over the weekend. A lot of it will be embargoed. I'm eagerly anticipating, you know, what he poured out there, and we'll have Simon on over the coming days to talk about that. But before he went into that side room, Jamie Delgado was waiting for him outside the little TV interview room, and he'd obviously, I guess, been contacted by Matt Gentry, Andy's agent, and told Andy's all but retired here and now. And Andy saw him there waiting, and they just collapsed onto one another in an embrace, sobbing on one another's shoulders. And it was one of the most sort of beautiful, awful things I've ever seen. And I felt like I was imposing by looking at it, but equally I couldn't stop looking at it because it was incredible and awful, and sort of told you everything about what they've been through together to try and get back to where they want to be, and realizing it's not possible.
Yeah, I think that just about sums it up. Tough morning that way, and again, because it is a sport, and it's, you know, it's not life and death in that way. I'm reluctant to get too dramatic about things like that, but at the same time, you can't ignore what the gut tells you, and it is pretty gut wrenching to have witnessed that press conference today, because I think it goes beyond hitting balls back and forth and so forth. He's had 18 months really where he really, I think he's been in shock a lot of the time, because 2 years ago he was world number one. He's supposed to have been battling it out with Nadal, Federer and Djokovic for the game's major titles in this 2 year period, which is supposed to be his peak, and he just can't do it. And I think that has been very, very tough for him. And actually what's interesting is that when you look back at the US Open is just how incredibly well he did to be that competitive, because I listened back to our podcast following the Verdasco match on the plane over, and I was convinced at the time that he was back, that this is doable. But then my mind goes back to a little conversation I had with Nigel Sears, his father-in-law and very well respected coach of Annette Contaveit, and Nigel said that after that match in Washington where he beat Marius Koppel, and then in the middle of the night back home, and then just collapsed into
in
tears.
The middle of the night in Washington.
Yeah, and he sobbed uncontrollably, didn't he, on his chair. And Nigel sent a sort of jovial message to him, and come on, Rocky, you don't have to take them all 3 hours. You know, you can win some of these in straight sets. You know, and he didn't reply with humour this time. He replied just with sort of desperation that I'm playing in pain, and I'm fed up of playing in pain. And that ultimately is something that only the individual can tell you their threshold, can decide that threshold. And it clearly today, from what he was saying, it's getting worse, if not not better. So be it.
Yeah, I mean, I make no apology for how emotional I feel about it, and I don't think any of us should really. I mean, first of all, seeing another human being in despair, I don't care what that's about. It's right to feel emotional about that, Andy Murray's been a significant part of all of our lives, he will be involved in tennis. I think he needs some time to figure everything out and come to terms with it. It's not that he won't be a feature of our lives anymore, but it's kind of, everything changes from today onwards, doesn't it? Everything changes. We're sorrowful for him. We're sorrowful for ourselves. We're mourning an era.
Mm. And actually, that was the sort of that was the atmosphere in that press conference room. It was funereal in a way. And because, look, you know, he's had his moments with the media here. We've gone head to head about things. He hasn't agreed with things that have been said or written. People haven't agreed with him about his behaviour from time to time, but there's a huge amount of mutual respect, certainly respect towards Andy Murray. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but certainly there's a lot of respect. But I think there is, and there I actually is. Think that there is also
the time he gave to us all today.
Yeah,
there is.
Yeah, and I also think that there is an affection for the human being. I think we have got to know Andy Murray, and it. Over the years, I mean, it was a rough beginning in one or two quarters, but I also think that that is reflected in the way the world has got to know him over the years. He's grown up and in front of us,
And look at the way he's allowed us to get to know him. I mean, we've all learnt more about him just today from witnessing what we do. I know we've seen outpourings of emotion from him before, but even today we've reached sort of a new level of understanding about who he is and what he's been through. And they don't all let you in like that, and I know it hasn't always been the case with Andy Murray. He's had to go on a journey with the media and with the public, but boy has he sort of achieved a level of opening up which I think we should all feel pretty privileged about, really. I mean, for me, I realise I say this with both recency bias and tennis bias, but for me, he is Great Britain's greatest ever athlete. I know I can be challenged on that, but equally, I feel like I could defend that position pretty well in a debate. And this is a sad, sad day. And I know it was always going to come, regardless of hip injury, whatever, but for it not to have happened on his terms, not even remotely on his terms, and to witness the despair that he feels about it is pretty terrible, really.
We will get back to talking about happier things and tennis in the days to come. And actually, I think we'll probably go daily from here. We were going to do a sort of reaction podcast to the interview day tomorrow. But as Catherine said, we'd like to talk to Simon Briggs when we get that opportunity to do so, because he comes at it from a slightly different angle.
Oh, Matt's still in the air.
Oh, yeah. Grad Matt's on his way, folks. You're not missed
much,
Matt.
Don't worry, Matt. You haven't missed anything.
And we obviously we want to go through the draw with some detail and really get into that and make our predictions, all the rest of it. But I hope you'll understand why we are devoting this show to Andy Murray, because we talked about it a week or two ago, didn't we? About at some point one of these great icons of the sport in this incredible era, both men and women, is going to retire, and this is the first one, and it requires reflection, and also just the manner of it today is it's something that I don't think I'll ever forget. I mean, I've been around long enough to see a lot of people retire, and I was speaking briefly earlier on today to Ivan Ljubicic, who doesn't speak to the media anymore. We've joked about it that
he's on federal lockdown.
Yeah, he is, and I respect that. You know, that's his call. I don't mind that, but he's always very sociable and very friendly off air, etc. But I said to him, "Would you talk to me about Andy Murray on BBC Radio?" And he said, he thought for a minute. He said, "Yeah, I will," because he talked about me when I retired, and I really appreciated it. And they all go through this. Mark Philippoussis, as I spoke to earlier on, who's another athlete whose body just sort of didn't allow him to do the things he wanted to do. I mean, as he himself said, Andy Murray's got way, way more out of his career and body than he ever did, and was a better player, honestly. But and look, it was going to happen at some point. It's just that it feels like Andy Murray and the tennis world has been denied probably about 3 or 4 years compared to what it expected. Maybe it's a bit greedy, because, you know, you go back into previous eras and players when they were 31, well, they do retire. But he was at the top of the hill 2 years ago, and that's what's so hard, I think, to accept the the speed with which this has gone downhill.
I can't think of any trajectories that have been even close to comparable to Andy Murray. Yes, there are Philippoussis that have, you know, had to face up to their athletic mortality a lot sooner than they'd have wanted to, and had, you know, had things taken out of their control. But for somebody to have basically plummeted from their absolute peak into, I mean, okay, it's been drawn out over 2 years, but really, okay, you had the first half of 2017, but since then, with the benefit of hindsight, we now know the writing's been on the wall. The writing's been on the wall since he was world number one. I can't think of anything even close to that in tennis. I have to give it some more thought. I mean, I don't know if there are any other sports people that, you know, at Tennis Podcast, let us know. But off the top of my head, I just can't think of anything like it.
Yeah.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Very briefly, just before we get on to this, just very briefly about Andy Murray's career, is the one thing that stands out above all else that as a moment, or do you want to give that a bit more thought as well?
I think we might not be sitting here now, today, talking about this now. If Andy Murray, I think there are two things that if he hadn't done them, hadn't committed to them, this day might have been put off. And I don't know that. I'm not a medical expert. I don't know the details of his injury enough. But my feeling is that had he not given his heart and soul to winning the Davis Cup and to hauling himself to world number one at the end of 2017.
Talk about mind over matter.
We wouldn't. I think he exhausted about 50% of his canister on those two efforts,
yeah.
And he would have a bit more left in it. He sort almost made the decision to, right, you can jet propel yourself to these two things now, or you can sort of, you know, be world number three for the next 3 years or something.
That 18 months, wasn't it?
Yeah.
From the middle of 2015 when he helped drag Great Britain to that,
yeah,
Davis Cup crown. He didn't do it on his own, but without him it was impossible, and he did so much of it, and he finished it on clay, etc., etc. And then the following year his first child was born here, wasn't it, three years ago, and he still got to the final, and then he won Wimbledon, and then the one that I was going to mention, Olympic gold, that match that he played against Del Potro, when was
Del Potro, who incidentally, sorry to interrupt David, has just tweeted something. I wasn't going to bring it up because I'm not sure we can take any more emotion, but can I just quote the man himself?
I haven't seen this.
Andy, I just watched your conference. Please don't stop trying. Keep fighting. I can imagine your pain and sadness. I hope you can overcome this. You deserve to retire on your own terms whenever that happens. We love you, Andy Murray, and we want to see you happy and doing well. Sorry, David.
Slimey.
As you were.
Oh, it's always Juan Martín, isn't it? He's always yeah. the one that just sends you over the edge. Certainly is for me, anyway. Crikey. Well, yeah.
You should finish your point. I'm sorry to interrupt
no,
you.
No, but actually that match they played, and I think because Del Potro was in a similar sort of position to where Murray is now, he'd seen the last rites of his career before him, and he'd managed to find a way, and I'm sure that's why he's saying keep fighting, because he knows what this is like. And those two wrestling over the bone that was the tennis ball that day was, and I wasn't there, I was watching that on TV, but I mean that was one of the most emotional matches I've ever watched. I felt so moved by it all. Yeah, it's one of many, many memories, that we'll always have of Andy Murray's career.
This won't be the last of our tributes to Andy Murray, will it?
No.
We'll do something.
This is immediacy.
Considered, and this is us trying not to cry.
Yes, on a
for
podcast.
Half an hour, on a podcast. Yeah.
We should say a couple of other things. We're going to get into the draw, I think, tomorrow or on Sunday, because it doesn't really feel like the right time to do so. But there has been some British success today. Dan Evans has qualified. Harriet Dart has qualified. Both hugely, hugely impressive, and very differing situations, weren't they? You were out there for Evans's match.
I did, yeah. Thank goodness for Dan Evans and Harriet. I think they both clinched match point almost simultaneously, and court 15 where Dan Evans was closer to where I was, so I watched Evo, and it felt like you know when, I don't know, you see a bit of awful Brexit news on the telly, or you look at your Twitter timeline and something bananas and dreadful from Donald Trump pops up, and you just disappear into a well of absolute despair, and then someone sends you a video of an animal doing something funny or cute. You're like, yes, thank you, universe, I needed that. Dan Evans today was my funny animal video. It was my dog doing a guilty face.
He's coached now by David Felgate, which I think is a masterstroke of a coach.
A man with the best tan in town. I was sat just across from David Felgate. Leon Smith was out there as well, looking like he was wearing a full tub of sunblock. Good on you, Leon. Slip, slap, slop, as they say out here. And I love watching Dan Evans play tennis. I know, you know, let's not talk about Dan Evans, the man, the Brummy. But Dan Evans as a tennis player is a joy to watch. And he was brilliant today. He was chasing everything down. He looks fit. He wasn't wilting in the heat. And that court is, there's no shade on it. He looks trim and so pumped. He was providing a running commentary on every single point. None of it broadcastable, but all of it brilliant. And, I think we both think he could be our... If you had to have money on a Brit in this tournament,
yeah,
to go the deepest, I mean, all draw aside, you'd go for Kyle Edmund, but poor bloke's got Thomas Burdick in the first round.
I don't think Evans's draw has...
It hasn't. I mean...
We don't know what that
TBC,
is.
TBC, but he was in good form. And Harriet Dart, who I didn't see, sorry, Harriet, but her first ever time qualifying for a main draw. Good. And she lost the first set quite heavily, I think, so good on her.
Something always happens at the Australian Open for us Brits, doesn't it? Kyle Edmund last year out of nowhere, Joe Konta semi-finalist, Andy Murray five-time finalist. So maybe there'll still be some rabbit that we can pull out of some hat somewhere in a Davin.
I'm telling
Dan
you,
Evans
it's going to be Dan
way.
Evans.
Okay.
Solihull's right. Finest.
Okay, well, we will come back tomorrow and do another podcast. I don't know what about, what time exactly, or anything else, but we'll do that. It is beautiful sunny weather here. I'm not trying to rub it in, but it is. And we have been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Tennograph, executive produced this year by tennisballs.com. If you want to become an executive producer, you can, still, because our Kickstarter runs until Monday. Realise we've already funded it, certainly on the surface of things. That may change if people start taking the money out, which happened right at the end last year. One or two did when they realised we'd already been funded, so please don't do that, because it's not fair on the rest. But anyway, you can still get involved, you can still introduce the show, you can still enter the predictions competition, you can still have your name on our Tennis Podcast backers page, and well, whatever we get, we will put to good use in order to fund us to be able to keep this show running and try to do the best job we can. So, you know, it's not wasted. Chip in if you can, if you want to, and we'll appreciate that. But a huge thank you from Catherine and myself and Grad Matt, who now will hopefully accept our job offer that we're going to be able to give to him. But
embarrassing, no, if he says no now.
It would be a bit, wouldn't it? We probably should have checked that before. Anyway, as things stand, we are funded, and well, a huge thanks from us to you.
Yeah.
But that's it. That has been the Tennis Podcast on a day that Andy Murray has told us that his career is coming to an end. We don't know exactly when, but it appears sooner rather than later. And let's enjoy this last little bit while we can. And we'll be back with you again tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.